Hello guys, and welcome to the latest edition of the Black Spin Global Podcast. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Lucy.
And yeah guys, welcome to this latest episode, and I'm very, very pleased to say we're joined by The Guardian's Tamani Carriol. How are you doing, Tamani?
Good, thanks. I'm back again.
Thank you. Yeah, I was going to say, thank you. Yeah, is this like your third appearance on
my 90th time? and I keep coming back.
No, we love having you, man. So thanks again for joining us. But yeah, man, so much to talk about. Like in this, I guess we're going to call it like the preview pod to the French Open that's going to start literally. I say it's going to start. It will be out. Literally, once we're out, it would have started. So, yeah, let's get into it. First, let's kind of do a quick news roundup. It's kind of been the topic of, I guess, the main topic of discussion for the past few days now. Naomi Osaka and her decision not to do press during the French Open. What are your, like, views, basically? Lucy, if you want to go first.
I just feel like if she doesn't want to do it, then she just doesn't want to do it. Like, I don't know. To me, I don't really find it a huge deal because, number one, I feel like Osaka is someone who does not really like a lot of pressure that way. Number two, things with Osaka, so I feel like she deals with a lot of things behind the scenes that we don't know, just like everyone else, to be very honest. We really don't know what people go through in general, yet alone with her. And there's been a lot of talk about her performance with clay and grass, from fans to the press, from everyone, probably with people, you know, from her team. And I think the pressure now compared to last year or 2 years ago is completely different because, you know, now she's, you know, she has 4 Grand Slams, you know, she's rich, she's known, she's this, she's that. She's not in the same position as before. And things happen really quick with Osaka. Like, her growth and her fame happen really quickly. So maybe she hasn't had enough time to process certain things. So maybe she doesn't know how to deal with certain pressures from the press as of now. She's still very young compared to someone who's, you know, very much experienced, like a top player who's been in this, doing this for such a long time. And I don't know, like, to me, I feel like people are making this a bigger deal than it is.
Yeah.
In my honest opinion.
Just to give like some context, like, she put out a statement, it was on the 26th of May now. Was that a Tuesday or Wednesday? And yeah, if I just read a quick like excerpt from it, basically she's saying that she's often felt that people have no regard for athletes' mental health, and this rings very true whenever I see a press conference or partake in one. We're often sat there and asked questions that we've been asked multiple times before, or asked questions that bring doubt into our minds, and I'm just not going to subject myself to people that doubt me. The mental health thing, like, that's quite a topical like thing at the moment. And I think for athletes as well, yeah, like, they are subjected to a lot of, like, crap, like, especially on social media, for instance. And, like, Tamani, you being, like, a tennis journalist, like, how did you, when you read that statement from Osaka, like, yeah, what were your kind of first thoughts, like, as a journalist, basically, first and foremost?
It's a safe space.
I guess I'll start with the mental health thing, like, you know, it's definitely true that, you know, the questions that journalists ask can have an effect on players. You know, many of them, you know, heard in the past, you know, players who, the ones who are actually kind of on good terms with the press, be like, oh, I like you guys, but I'd rather, it would be better if I didn't have to talk, you know, it would be great if I didn't have to do these press conferences, because then I go home and think about it and it affects me, blah, blah, blah. And so I definitely think, you know, that I wouldn't ever say that against that Osaka has been affected by these press conferences, and I think in that sense it's I guess you could say it's bold that she was willing to bring it up and to speak about it. And the interesting thing to me, obviously, as one of the few black journalists in the press conferences, is sitting in her press conferences and seeing how people interact with her as a black and an Asian woman. And I mean, we've all seen, you know, the questions that are asked, you know, of her or Serena or whatever, in regards to, you know, that there was a period when she first came up, there was a period where people just wanted to know about her, about being black and Asian all the time. Mm-hmm. And that pissed her off. There's the way that she's still to this day, even though it seems pretty obvious that they're on good terms, that she's constantly pitted against Serena. Mm-hmm. And I think there are kind of many, many reasons why players would not want to really speak with the press. I agree with you, Lucy, that, like, I mean, when it comes down to it, I don't really, you know, if a player doesn't want to do press, particularly like if they, in terms of when they take the fine, like even Djokovic, when he got disqualified and he just
bounced. Like,
within 10 minutes, there was video of, there's that gif on Twitter of him getting in his tester and just going off. And like whatever, like that's fine. And particularly as, you know, 10 days later, he came and he spoke to the press. And I mean, he was more calm and probably more willing to speak and that and whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't really care. That's not my issue. The weird thing for me was just that her statement wasn't really about, maybe she was hinting at it when she said, you know, about the repeated questions, but it wasn't really about all the other weird stuff. It wasn't about, I mean, I don't know if you guys saw, you did the interview with Coco Gauff and the question that she was asked about, yeah, being black and compared to Venus and Serena.
Do you know who asked that question?
No, I have no idea.
Tamina, are you sure you don't know?
No, I would actually at least say, like, I think maybe it was a German accent or something, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. It may have been, I mean, that's also the weird thing about these press conferences. Like, there's so many, like, I think people still don't, like, get that. There's so many different types of people and different nationalities. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people I just don't know.
Because you wrote about it as well, and like, which I really enjoyed reading. And, like, to kind of get your take, to go back to Lucy's point quickly as well, Lucy, I think you made a really good point when you said, like, how Osaka, she's fairly new to this, even though she's a four-time, like, Grand Slam winner. Mm-hmm. Like, it's happened very quickly, like you said. Whereas a lot of players, obviously Serena, you know, women that have kind of won multiple slams, they've been in this for like a decade almost.
And like, remember, and hers started off kind of negative in a way. Her first Grand Slam was full of drama and people focused more on the drama than anything else.
Yeah.
It's sadly, you know, so that's the thing. It's not like she started off and everyone was like, oh my God, probably just the Japanese media, you know, they're probably the only ones where, you know, they were going all crazy and it was all more positive. But around the West, you know, it was just like too much and pitting them against each other. And, you know, so she's always had that extra pressure after that and everything. But I don't think people really consider that.
Sure. I think as well, Tamini, one of the things I liked in your piece about this is when you said that while some players understandably protect themselves by offering as little as possible, Osaka is one of the most forthcoming and insightful speakers, and her rapport with the media is better than most. And like, I from the kind of like clips I see on like YouTube, for instance, obviously, I could always... You've got a very distinctive voice. Like, so when you ask a question, I know it's you. But, like, her face kind of, like, lights up with certain journalists. You're one of them. Because it's like she... That rapport, like you said, like, you can tell she has that with a certain few journalists that are in those rooms. Yeah. And to quickly, like... I don't want to, like, spend too much time talking about this, but just to go on the race thing, like, I do think it's... Even though she didn't mention this anywhere in her statement, I do think that plays a role. And something 100%. That Jemele Hill, who's an American sports broadcaster, she tweeted, and we quote tweeted it. She basically said, another reason is the lack of diversity in the media is a big... Another reason the lack of diversity in media is a big problem. Not saying this drives her decision as an Osaka's decision not to do press. But minority athletes are predominantly covered by white journalists. They drive their narratives. There were some great journalists, but there's also a huge cultural disconnect. Like, and that's something we've spoken about so many times on this pod. Like, the fact that, you know, you've got basically this predominantly white sport with very few, you know, black, and like you said, obviously soccer's black and Asian, but very few minorities playing in this sport, but they're literally being covered by, you know, white people and mostly white men. So just in terms of like that kind of empathy that's sometimes lacking, like you can, it's not unheard of, but it's not a surprise basically.
And they don't understand.
Exactly. Like, and kind of we've seen the uproar like on Twitter and stuff. Yeah. Like there's a lot of,
they literally, her point right now, the way people completely have been going at it. I'm so sorry to many, but your peers are going crazy at the moment. Some are basically threatening her, some are acting,
it's
like,
quite embarrassing. It's yeah.
Ridiculous. And the reason why I'm more annoyed, I know for a fact if it was another white player who came and did the same thing, whether they were her age or technically a bit older or wanted to talk, they wouldn't be acting like this. Mm. Like, we all know this. That's a bit that's really pissing me off. And it's like, I feel like everyone dismissed the fact that she mentioned her mental health. Yeah. And they're literally making it even worse. But, you know, but at the same time, I do understand, you know, people that are like journalists and stuff, because this is their job. And one thing that you did mention that was really important in your article to Mady was, you know, there's some who are local journalists, and these are the little stuff
only
opportunities and stuff, or like the Japanese ones and whatnot. So those bit I do understand, but you know, at the end of the day, I feel like a lot of people are ignoring the bigger thing out all of this, where she mentioned her mental health. I feel like that's being dismissed by every single person. Mm. And that's why there's this taboo where people feel like when someone who's going through something in terms of their mental health, people always use the word selfish, because they're making a decision for themselves, which is affecting other people, but no one is actually thinking about maybe that decision is best for them, and it's not just about you at the moment. So as long as she feels like this decision is helping her, then I feel like we can just support her, and that people should just calm down a little bit. Like, a lot of people don't even watch these fucking press conferences. I'm sorry. Yeah, well, some don't watch it. I watch it, but some don't.
Yeah. But I like it. Yeah. So I will say, like, on that, my criticism would be that, you know, there's the way she receives the question and the way they affect her, which is her feelings, and you know, none of us can say how she feels, but I do think that the way she kind of, you know, you know, as we've like discussed, like the statement was still specific, very specific, which surprised me. It was about, you know, the effect, you know, about when she's talking about doubt, that's presumably about questions regarding matches and, you know, possibly losses and all of that stuff. And so for me, you know, I mean, recently she hasn't lost much, but during the clay season she has, and you know, I don't think that those she received a lot of like repeated questions about the clay. You know, every press conference there were like four or five press conferences. How are you feeling on the clay? You know, how does that affect you? Blah blah blah. But I don't think that those questions are inherently like doubting her or thinking that she's going to use. She may like take it like that, but also those are questions that you know these press conferences are kind of to get information, and some of the information is definitely like redundant, like it's been asked already.
Yeah,
but that's kind of what it's for. And you know, a lot of players get the same questions in terms of like if Nadal's, you know, has greatest forehand of all time, if it's terrible for like two tournaments in a row, he'll get a ton of questions on that. And it's interesting to me, like, everyone takes it differently. Some players would much rather talk about how shit their forehand is than about all the other shit that people will ask them about in a press conference. So, I don't know. I just, to me, that didn't really, like, match up with kind of the reality that, you know, people are probably nicer to her than, say, someone like, in this subject, in terms of like losses, say someone like, I don't know, Caroline Wozniacki, where like for 8 years people were just like, you're slamless number one, probably never going to win another slam. That was kind of the subtext of a lot of the questions. So but I think it's just a very complex subject.
That's why I think she was preparing herself. I think it was, I personally think it's a thing where she was like, you know what? If I lose the first round or even quarterfinals or semifinal, these people are going to be on my neck and I can't mentally deal with it. So let me just not do anything now. Because if you remember, her last Wimbledon match was she lost in the first round. She was there for like 10 seconds and she literally broke down. She was like, can I leave? I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
Hence why I believe it might happen. Matter of fact, I thought this would, I would see this happening even more in Wimbledon than French Open. So that's why I feel like it was a thing where she was just protecting herself. And she's like, you know what? I don't want to deal with this right now. I just want to focus on trying my best and then playing and enjoying.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it might not even be really personal. I think it's just a thing where she was just trying to protect herself. But obviously, I think the statement where she described it kind of made it feel like, raw, like, are you telling me I can't really do my job? Are you telling me that I'm not? Especially for some journalist who's never asked her, you know, any offensive or hard or questions. Yeah. Do you get what I mean? I understand it from both perspectives.
Yeah. I'm talking a lot.
Not at all.
I'd say for me, like, as you said, I mean, I have no idea what she thinks of me, but she's always been, like, pleasant and, you know, she's answered every question I've asked.
You're definitely one of her faves, definitely.
And so my assumption, whether or not it's true, is that, you know, when she mentioned the journalist who she was close with, probably it's
you didn't feel triggered.
I didn't think I'm like the person who she thinks is asking repeated questions, but I still, and I'm like personally critical of like the journalists. I'm happy to be critical of them, even though other people aren't. But yeah, I just felt that was off in a way with what people are actually trying to do in these situations. But
I think you both make great points. Like and just to close, because I don't want to spend too long talking about it. But yeah, I agree with you, Lucy, in that I think it's a thing of like her protecting herself essentially. Like, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And like she's going to get fined and that's been well publicized, but I mean,
chicken money.
We'll talk about that in a minute as well. Like she can more than afford those fines. So yeah, I just don't want this to be a thing where she continues to do this. Like, well, yeah, like at Wimbledon, let's say the next slam. Cause I can't see her doing it at the US Open, obviously, where she's defending.
Her agent's going to be on her neck. She can't do it. It's two slams.
Yeah,
it's not like Wimbledon is a small tournament.
And another thing as well, and like, I don't want, basically I just don't want this to kind of like cause like a divide, because there are a lot of questions already being asked, you know, to other tennis players. Oh, like, what are your views on Osaka not doing press? And like some of the answers have been a bit, and again, I don't want to spend too much time talking about that, but then again, like I said, I don't want that to then cause friction and like I don't want her to kind of be made not a scapegoat but like the villain, like in all this, basically, because she's an amazing tennis player and like that to me is being lost in all this. So yeah,
just like her first US Open, which I feel like it was her best. To this day, I feel like that match with Serena was her best match. But unfortunately, we will never speak about that because people are always speaking about the drama. That match, the quality was it was insane, man.
But no, I'm looking forward to seeing her, and like hopefully she has a good run at the French. But we'll talk about that in a bit. Next topic, Osaka again. So she's literally the highest paid female athlete in the world. According to Sportico, so she ranked 15th in the top 100, and her earnings amassed, well, endorsements / winnings, was a total of $55.2 million over the past 12 months. And Serena, she was also on that list. So Serena was 44th, and her total was $35.5 million US dollars. And like, I'm always fascinated by these lists. Like, I hate kind of watching athletes' money, but yeah, to see there are like seven tennis players on this list, and like only two women in general, like, it's pretty incredible. Like, what were your kind of views, Tamani, like when you saw, because I saw you quoted Sportico, or I'm pretty sure you quoted, you did quote Osaka.
Yeah.
In one of your pieces, but yeah, what was your view when you saw that, or feelings even?
I mean, not surprised. I don't know. I will say, who knows what the real figure is?
Yeah.
Remember, Sharapova was once like they don't know my bank account, which was one of the truest things Sharapova said. I think, like, oh, that wasn't. See, I just unintentionally just shade people.
Oh, geez.
But no, I think. Well, I mean, yeah, it wasn't. It's not a surprise given like how her profile has risen over the kind of past year as well. She was already the richest female athlete in terms of her yearly earnings. And that was with, like, when her endorsements were still, like, probably primarily, majority Japanese.
Yeah, young.
And now she started to kind of, well, since the US Open as well, like, there's more and more US brands, like.
Global, yeah. Well, mm-hmm.
Yes, so, yeah, so, I mean, that's just going to rise, I think. And, I expect it to continue rising. And it's also interesting with Serena, honestly, that she's, even though she's second now, she's actually making more than she probably did. I think, I mean, obviously there's like inflation and whatever, but I think she's making more than she did in the past when sometimes it would be under 30,000.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I think she is for sure. She's making more probably than Sharapova was, which is.
I think with Serena, she's an incredibly astute like businesswoman. Like she's kind of shown that as well, like over the years.
Yeah.
Lucy, what
she's been investing in a lot of businesses and stuff.
Yeah, what are your like views or take?
You know me, it makes me really happy to just see, you know, another black woman earning her peas, especially like I've always said, we had to spend here years watching the Williams sisters being underpaid. So, you know, seeing their impact.
Yeah.
Through, you know, the future of like black tennis players getting their money was worth is just amazing. You know, like I said, like once we posted it on Black Spin Global Twitter, the first thing I tweeted was thank you Venus Williams, because this is all her. Do you get what I mean? Like this is all them. So yeah,
you gave them a history lesson.
Yes, you need to know your history, you know, educate these people.
No, straight up,
know?
Yeah.
So yeah, man, like Tamani said, like, you know, now it's becoming a bit more global. It's not just the Japanese brands, you know, and it makes me wonder as well. I wonder if she was American, if it would have been the same, it would have been less or more, because Sharapova, for example, if she was American, she would be earning, even as this right now, she's probably still be earning even more than everyone at the moment.
Interesting.
Because her being Russian was there. I remember my dad used to be on the TV when we watch her play, be like, this girl's so stupid. I'm like, why? It's like, why did she not just change nationality to just America? She'd be any more money. So sometimes I do wonder, you know, with Osaka, if we would have been in a different America. But at the end of the day, you know, again, I'm just happy to see another, you know, woman, black woman, and tennis as well. Is that seeing that, you know, I feel like these type of things are bringing more people interested into tennis and seeing them in these type of lists. And you need to remember as well, we don't actually know the correct, because these are accurate, this is not really, they're accurate information, but to an extent.
Yeah.
So that's why with Williams, for Serena Williams, I'm pretty sure it's more than that.
Yeah, no, you got a good point. You make a good point.
I'm pretty sure it's more than that because she's been investing a lot in tech companies and stuff like that. So, man, just keep on getting paid. And people, put your kids into Project Osaka, man. There's money to be made in tennis.
Straight.
Like, forget about that Mbappe guy, whatever his name is. Come into tennis.
No, shouts out to Osaka, man, and Serena, of course. The next topic I want to spend a bit of time talking about is Frances Tiafoe, friend of the pod.
He shared our story.
Yeah, so. I saw that. Brilliant. Hey, Baptiste. He wrote a nice column. It's the Eurosport Players' Voice column. And it was a year on, obviously, after George Floyd. So in the piece, he spoke about the Rackets Down, Hands Up campaign or video that he put together. But also he spoke about, you know, his dream of one day winning a slam and taking it back to Sierra Leone, which is where his parents are from, which I love. Like, obviously, he's born and bred in, you know, the USA, like DC, kind of born and raised. He's very proud of DC. And like, I think he's a Washington Wizards fan. But it was just nice kind of to hear or read the fact, like, he's so connected to Sierra Leone.
Yeah, he's always been.
Like, yeah, like so I'm always like a fan of, you know, tennis players, even though they're, you know, representing a nation you know, where they're born, they also have like that affinity, like with, you know, the country of their parents' birth. Most of the time it's African, and like, I love that. So yeah, I don't know if you guys have anything else to add on that.
I mean, as a Sierra Leonean myself,
of course.
Yeah, it's cool to see Francis like being able to just say what he wants and to put this out there and to have, you know, these platforms to continue to kind of speak his truth, I guess.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. It's just to me, it's just it's nice to see, and yeah, I hope, you know, he has big dreams, and I'm curious to see like if, because obviously the big difference between him and Osaka is that, well, I mean, there are many obviously, but Osaka is so successful and she has her platform is even bigger, so I'm curious to see like what he, you know, if he is able to rise up the rankings more and have more power, even more like of an audience, what he would do with that.
Lucy, anything else to add?
I definitely agree with Tumeini, and he's always used his platform like really well and stuff, and he's, I just feel like he's just like good vibe type of guy. I feel like he does his own thing, you know, like you don't see like any bad or negative energy like around him and stuff, so
he is one of the most likable guys on the tour, definitely.
Very respectful to like everyone, sometimes even too respectful. I even want to see that little roughness there, bring a little bit of drama, but that's not him and that's fine. But I just hope that he just continues in his platform like he does, and I feel like a lot of the black players in tennis do, like, you know, Keys, Stevens, especially. We spoke about that before. Like all of them, they're on job.
Brilliant. Next, a quick roundup now, like events. So obviously we had Coco Gauff winning in Parma, doing the clean sweep, which is just insane. And again, you wrote a nice piece to Mani on that, which is brilliant. That's last week Monday now. But yeah, like, did you guys watch? I say to Mani, I take it you watched quite a bit of her in Parma.
A bit, yeah.
What matches stood out for you, like, in during that run?
Let me see.
Because for me, it was the I forgot her name now. The girl that took out Serena in the second round.
Siniakova.
That's it. Yeah, that for me was a really like. It was a statement match for Coco Gauff, because I think she's got a winning record against Siniakova, because she beat her in Ostrava last year, I want to say, and that was indoors, but obviously this was on clay. And like I've said it to Lucy again on the pod many times, like, I love the way Coco Gauff moves on clay. Like, she's so comfortable on the clay, and like, it's just so good to see for someone so young, like, how, like, just astute and comfortable she is on the clay. Obviously she won the junior French Open, didn't she? So it's no real surprise. But what did you make of her run? Like,
I mean, it was kind of impressive to see her, you know, because over the past, like, since she's been on tour, really, so many of her matches have been tight three setters where she's battling and it's not always pretty, and, you know. So it was nice to see her just go through the draw. And there was that one match against Siniakova where she lost the second set and then bounced back. But aside from that, she was, you know, her level was high. She was really solid. And, you know, I think we're kind of seeing just more of what she's about. And she's, you know, as you said, her movement is her biggest thing, her biggest strength. And so, and she's very smart and, you know, she's intelligent and she's, kind of, she knows how to disrupt opponents. You know, her forehand isn't her best shot, but she knows how to, you know, she'll throw in slices or she'll forehand slices or drop shots. She likes to come to the net. So I like seeing just how her whole game is developing and how she's learning how to play at, you know, a solid level throughout. I think, you know, her serve still has to improve, but she also kept that in check mostly.
She did
throughout the week. I mean, which has been obviously one of the biggest issues with her. And She said, you know, one of the things she spoke about was that she's just, and I think it was in Rome as well, but she's just enjoying her tennis more and that in, before, like when she would, you know, I mean, it was quite obvious, you know, you'd see her on the court last year and at times she just looked really stressed. And that obviously then fed into probably the double faults and things like that. Mm-hmm. And she said that her dad spoke to some other players and also some other players, like ex-players reached out to her and were like, just, you know, I think she said this in the Roland Garros press conferences. So, and she was like, well, they were saying, you know, now when I look back at my career, you know, I wish I enjoyed this moment more, you know, when I was 17. So just, you know, enjoy it and don't stress out so much because you'll get to, you know, where you want to go. And, you know, now she's, what, she's 25th in the ranking? I think 25th, yeah, 25th in the ranking.
Yeah.
She's now a front runner to, if it happens, go to the Olympics. You know, with points off, I think she's in the fourth spot and ahead of, like, I'd say Keys and Pegula are the big kind of people who could, you know.
Because they're still in the top 30, above. Yeah,
But Keith had a quarterfinal from 2019, so that goes off now. So, yeah, so she's doing really well, and you know, sorry, I'm
no, not at all.
You know,
it's a podcast, but, man. Talk.
Right. I'm used to just writing and not saying. But yeah, so I think what was I going to say? She's because obviously when she first broke through at 15 and all of that hype. As soon as, you know, she wasn't winning a Slam at 16 years old, you heard all the, like, the mutterings.
Oh, she ain't good. Yeah.
Exactly. And I'll be real, like, I'm not sure where she'll be. But what I do know is that if you're ranked 25th at 17 years old, you're doing very well.
Because, again, on that, not to cut you again, Sammy, I love how you always mention the age and, like, how kind of the next person or the I think it's Robin Montgomery. She's like the next seven or best 17-year-old and she's ranked what 370 something, like, which again is a massive achievement on Montgomery's part. Like, she's 17, like, literally playing pro women's tennis. That is, it's important to have that perspective, basically.
Yeah. And in general, like, recently with the Songa thing as well, Joe Wilfried Songa, I've been thinking a lot about the fact that people don't, like, recognize that. I mean, even if she wasn't 17, like, being the 25th ranked person in the world is fucking incredible.
It's insane. You know what I mean? Yeah, it really is.
Like, you know, like, every year in football, we'll list, like, the 100 best players, and the 100th player is, like, so one of the most popular players in the world, and everyone thinks he's amazing. Mm-hmm. But in tennis, because only one person can win, you know, being 25th is seen as a failure, which... I think that mindset needs to change.
No, 100%. 100%. Lucy, anything else to add on that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything that Tumaini said, especially on the whole, you know, her now enjoying the tennis more, because even when we bring her up on the pod, I always say I'm not worried because she's doing so much at such a young age. The pressure has been extremely unnecessary. You know, before all of this, like, you know, everyone getting on to her and she was getting to it. Even when she was losing, she was emotional. I was like, you know, you guys love bringing up her age when she's winning, but when she's losing, she's feeling this type of way. You're not bringing up the fact that she's still maturing, she's still learning, she's still, yeah, what I mean. This constant pressure on her was just ridiculous. I'm just really happy to see that she's enjoying and, like, you know, she's made a massive improvement, especially during this clay season. Like, just been great to see her play. And, you know, is what I notice is that I generally feel like players underestimate her game before they play her, and when they're on the court and seeing what she can do, is that, let me wake up, because even when she loses, it's not like a easy loss. Do you get what I mean? It's like
hard for, exactly, yeah,
hard for them. And if you look at even the matches that she's lost, she lost against players who are more experienced.
Should
you get
be
what I mean?
Her, exactly.
So, like,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's not what she's doing. People are making noise. I'm not a fan, but she, like, you know, she lost against Pliskova. She lost against what's her name? Starts with A. Anastasia. I forgot her name, but one of the Lithuanian players. like she, you know, she's losing against, like, big players. So and she's beating big players. You know, she beating someone.
I think Sevastova, that's the one. In Miami. Yeah.
You know, she beats Sabalenka and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm just really, again, I'm just happy that, you know, another black tennis player is doing really well. And I just hope that she just continue enjoying it. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
And it will be great to see her at the Olympics, like whether she wins or loses or whatever. It's just her being there, such a
that'd be crazy. Youngin. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I just need people to just stop. Like the way they've been talking about Coco, it's just really annoying. But you know, when you're playing, when you're doing good, you get haters.
That's what happens. Exactly.
I think she should just continue to not focus on them, just put it into her game and just enjoying it.
Quickly now, but like I'm going to speed through this roundup because I do want to get into the French Open. So we had Strasbourg last week. That Venus Williams competed in. She did lose in the first round to Simona Cîrstea, but that was a free set battle. And obviously Venus is kind of playing her way back in to kind of, I guess, form. She lost in the Australian Open second round, as I think it's to Irani, when she had that really horrible injury. So she's kind of like finding her way back. I loved her tweet or post on Instagram afterwards saying, basically it was a loss, but she looked cute in her outfit, which we mentioned.
And that post just shows to you that she's just enjoying.
Oh, it's brilliant. The mindset. Yeah. She's got a brilliant mindset.
Just like, you know what, like I will stop when I want to, but for now I'm good.
So she hasn't won since the Australian Open, but I mean, we'll talk about her draw in a minute. She has got a seed in the first round, which is a bit, it's a tough one, but yeah, it's just great to see Venus playing tennis, basically. Belgrade also happened last week. Gael Monfils was...
Oh, by the way, did you guys talk about Palmer in your last book? Or?
Palmer as in...
Her famous quote, "I can't control good."
Oh, no. No, we didn't. We didn't.
No, we need to talk about that because the way she...
The walk. It was the walk.
She was just like, I can't control God. So if there's something, you need to speak to God. And then she walked out and just like, I loved it.
It's a great point. That's a great shout out to Maydee. Because that was doing the rounds on Twitter and like that Insta as well.
Yeah, that's a new meme.
she's leaving us with some, you know, some goodies.
Some gems.
Exactly. Yeah,
indeed. Yeah, Belgrade happened, like I said, last week. Gael Monfils, he competed in that. Lost a grueling three-setter to Roberto Caballos Baena. I'm saying that correctly. Monfils had opportunities to win that, which was, I guess, it was tough to watch because obviously we all know he's struggling for like confidence at the moment and like just form. He did win in, where was it? The clay court event in France. I can't remember where it was. Was it Lyon?
It was Lyon,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's good to kind of see him get that win there. And like, hopefully he can kind of maybe find some form for the French Open, which we'll talk about in a bit. And yeah, lastly, Palmer, the ATP 250, that also happened last week. Mikel Yimmer came through qualifying there. It's quite annoying because his first round match wasn't aired on like tennis TV, even though it was played on center court, and I don't understand like what their kind of, I don't know, like rulings are like when it comes to like these matches.
I feel like it's always been an issue, and it's always an issue with black players from the moment that a Serena match is being cut off for Federer. You know that is, you know, and I love
where did that happen?
That was during Palmer.
Oh really?
Yeah, because he was playing at the tournament that
Geneva,
was
in Geneva.
And it's just like,
because that was Amazon Prime.
No, but I'm talking about like that was like in America. Apparently, that's what happened. I think on the tennis channel, where basically like they were watching the Serena match, and then boom, they just put Federer.
Yeah, that's quite rude. Like, yeah.
Okay, like, do you get what I mean? Like, you know, Serena cares more about clay than Federer. So Federer literally said, "I don't really care about the French Open. I know I'm not going to win it. I'm just playing it. Wimbledon, however, that's when you niggas going to catch me on court. For French Open, I'm going to let you guys have a little bit of fun." So So yeah, so I think that's an issue. Like, you know, we've had this so many times where black players are not being shown. So can you imagine a black player who's not big is even worse? So there needs to be some improvement.
I think that match was rescheduled, as in Emma's match. But at the same time, yeah, just
even if
just
it wasn't rescheduled, like... even if it wasn't, like, we've had this issue for a very long time. They love cutting up these matches for any of these white male players that no one wants to watch.
So now let's get into this French Open, which is why we're here. Let's start with the seed. So Naomi Osaka, she's the second seed. So she starts against Patricia Maria.
I think we should name that the name of the pod.
The Ghetto Open.
The Ghetto
Open. So Osaka, the second seed, she starts against Patricia Maria Teague. I think she's Romanian, isn't she, Teague?
Yes. Yeah.
How are we feeling about that? Are we going to say Osaka winning that? Or is that going to be an upset?
Yeah, I think that's a good draw. That's a good draw for her.
Yeah, I thought the first round.
Go on.
No, I'm saying I thought the same thing when I saw that. I was like, yeah, that's a decent draw.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Tarina, go on.
I was just going to say, I think the first round draw is good, but the draw, it changed. So I think Paola Badosa is now in the third, it's the third round, I believe.
Okay.
I think so.
And she's in form, she's playing quite well at the moment, isn't she, Badosa?
She's breaking through and just won her first title.
Yeah, that's why Black Tennis Tour was like, they're trying to set her up. that's happened. This is why we're calling it the Ghetto Open.
Serena Williams, the seventh seed. So she starts against another Romanian, Irina Camelia Begu. Again, I think that's a decent draw for Serena.
Yeah.
I think Serena has a decent, like, her overall draw, I think it looks okay.
Who she got in the second round potentially? I've not looked. I don't like to predict.
Yeah, I don't really like prediction as well, because it's like, it's tennis, like anything.
Exactly.
It's never what
always
we
an
see
upset. It. Always.
But
yeah.
Do you know what? It's so funny because we always say this, but we always check. We're like, oh my God. But then we all know that this potential is not happening. Oh gosh.
But yeah, decent draw, I think, for Serena. Madison Keys, the 23rd seed. So she starts against a French woman, Ossian Doudin. Again, decent draw, I think, for Keys. She's got a few wins under her belt as well, like since her like slow start to the year. And she does tend to play well in France, so good luck to Keys. Coco Gauff, seeded for the first time, the 24th seed, Roland Garros. So she plays. I've got it actually here. Alexandra Krunic.
Krunic, yeah.
So
yeah,
she came through qualifying. I think she's like top 300. Decent.
She's a former top 50 player.
Oh, so really? Okay, I didn't know that.
It's a good, I mean, in terms of, you know, form, it's good, but I mean, it could be tricky. But even that she won three matches as well.
Exactly. I was going to say, it's always tricky with qualifiers because they're coming in fairly hot, like, because they've got those three matches under their belt.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the seeds. So Sloane Stephens, former finalist, she's got Carla Suarez Navarro, which is quite nice. Obviously, that's going to be Navarro. This is her final like year on the tour. Obviously, she's just recovered from cancer, which is great.
See, that's why I feel like, oh, gosh, this is gonna be hard.
I saw someone tweet as well saying, "Oh, Sloane, you got to take one for the team." Like,
I know you feel for the girl, innit? Like, it is what it is. But like, come on, this is a slam. Like, put the feelings aside. But let the fans deal.
I think that's a good draw again for Stevens, and she's been playing quite well on the clay as well this year.
Yeah, she loves clay. Anyway,
yeah,
so,
she's actually said it's her favorite surface. So
yeah, I love watching her on clay.
I can see her having a good run.
Yeah, I'm interested to see. Her section is quite tough. So she'd play Pliskova in the second round if she gets it, which. But she was playing well. I thought it was kind of.
I think at the moment she can actually beat Pliskova. You know?
I think
Pliskova
she can.
Right now she's a bit, you know. Well, I mean, she got bagged in the bloody final. Pew, pew.
Damn.
It was a tough one.
No comment.
Yeah.
You're going to say something else to really on Sloan or?
Oh, no, just that she looked in Parma. She looked good, and we got so close to Sloan versus Coco.
Oh,
which...
that would have been insane. Yeah. If only.
The African people live final only.
If only. Venus, like that, as you were saying, she's got the 32nd seed, Ekaterina Alexandrova. I hope I'm saying that correctly. But that's a tough draw for Venus. Because I think she's a pretty good player. Like, she's fairly solid. But I can see Venus giving her problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Alexandra hits, like, she hits huge and flat. So,
yeah.
Well, depends on which one, how she shows up as well. I mean, we'll see with Venus. She, as long as her outfit looks good.
Exactly. She'll be... and then we've also got Heather Watson, the British number two. So she's got Zarina Diaz.
Yeah.
From Uzbekistan. Again, I know she lost to Diaz recently, actually. I think it was last year. But that's a decent draw for Watson, I want to say. Although she's been struggling for form as well this year. But what are your thoughts? I mean, you look a bit concerned.
No. I think, she couldn't. That's a good draw. That's a winnable first round. Mm. Who does she vote? Oh, and then that would be a tough, if she wins it, it would be a tough second round against Mertens.
Ooh, okay, at least the Belgian,
Yeah, it's a winnable first round. I don't think she could have hoped for, you know, much more than that for a first round.
Yeah.
And the box grades look good.
Yeah, they do. I do. I like that look on Heatherwell. And the Italian number two, Jasmine Paolini, she goes up against Stephanie Voigeli. I think she's from Switzerland. I can never say her name correctly. I want to say Vogel. Okay.
It's weird. Like, this is one of the players who I've only ever seen her name a million times, but I've never discussed her with anyone.
Have you seen her play?
Yeah, many times.
She's got quite an odd style. Like, it's quite.
Yeah.
I want to say quirky. Like, it's weird.
Yeah. I've watched her many times, but I've just never haven't really discussed her with many people. I don't know why. So I have my own pronunciation.
I'm going to go with yours. You're the tennis journalist here. So again, I think that's a decent draw for Paolini. So we'll see how she does. Brilliant news as well in terms of qualifying. So we've got Hayley Baptiste, the 19-year-old American who came through qualifying. So she'll be making her debut at Roland Garros, which is incredible. So she's got Anna Blinkova in the first round. And that's a tricky one. Like, I'm going to say for Blinkova, because like we just said earlier as well, like qualifiers, they're coming in, you know, hot with, you know, three matches under their belt. So no real expectations really on Baptiste, you know, to win that, because obviously Blinkova's ranked higher. But just a great opportunity, an incredible achievement to come through qualifying, like at the first time of asking as well. Did you watch any of her matches, Tamini?
No, I haven't watched many this week just because of other stuff. But
of course,
she's really fun. Baptiste is really fun and kind of a loose, awkward player to watch. I like her. And it's cool to see her, you know, steadily rising. And
she hits really hard as well. She hits a big ball, big serve.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see how she does, and like just in general, like I think she's gonna have a pretty good career. And it's funny as well, like quick story, don't want to spend too much time, but I thought it was her brother that was following on our Instagram account. It's actually her dad, but he looks so young, like which just blew my mind. So that's just, you know, they say black don't crack, but another debutante. Ossienne Barbel, so she's 17, she's a French wildcard. And again, she played the Junior French Open last year. I think she got to the quarterfinals. But yeah, she's been given a wild card for this year's event. And she's got a pretty tough draw. Like, she's got the fifth seed, Elina Svitolina, in the first round. And this is going to be an interesting one, because obviously Svitolina being the fiancé to Gael Monfils. So it's like, there might be
these
like...
French people are going
to... a bit of a divided crowd there. We'll see.
True.
We'll see. But I'm very excited to see Barbel, because obviously this is going to be, this will be her like WTA tour debut as well. Playing, that's, she's obviously been playing like ITFs and stuff. So again, just great to see another young black girl like coming through. So yeah, that wraps up the women. On the men's side now, nothing really stood out in terms of being like, oh wow, like blockbuster, but
yeah, I feel like I would actually tweeted like WTA taking over.
No, I didn't see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But just from our perspective. So you've got Gael Monfils, who's seeded 14th. He starts against Albert Ramos Vinolas, the Spaniard. Yeah, that's a tough draw. Like, cause
yeah, when I saw that, I was annoyed.
Vinolas, I think he made a final recently. One of the 250s. So
he won Estoril.
See, so that's a tough one for Monfils,
but
being in Paris.
But that's what I'm saying. I think Monfils is someone where that likes a crowd.
Exactly.
I think he was one of those players who did not enjoy at all.
Which he said, exactly, yeah.
Fans, which he said. So I think, you know, the crowd being there, being in France, when you're playing for your country, in your country, is a bit different. So I think, I actually think it's going to be a long match.
Yeah, a five-setter to warm him in.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be a five-setter or something like that. But we'll see.
Tamini, how do you see that?
I think Gael is, I mean, yeah, it's a tough first one, but I think Gael is, you know, it's slow. But he does seem to be like, you know, the matches he's losing are tighter, and he seems to be more, you know, obviously last year was tough, and then in Australia when he kind of broke down in his press conference, he obviously, it just wasn't enjoyable for him. But it seems like he's got a bit of a spark back, and eventually he will, you know, you would assume that there'll be a point where he gets a win and goes and is able to string more together.
Because that's what I think it's gonna take. Literally that one win that will like spark him into life. So hopefully that happens at this year at the French. Félix Auger-Aliassime, he's the 20th seed. He's got Andrea Seppi in the first round, and I think that's a pretty good draw for Felix.
Yeah. One he should win, yeah.
I don't think he's won a match at Roland Garros, because this would be his second appearance, someone to say, because he played Nishioka last year, lost in the first round. He didn't play in 2019. He pulled out just before, I remember. But yeah, I think that's a good round or good draw for Felix there. Joe Wilfred Tsonga, who Tamini wrote a brilliant interview on Saturday. If you haven't read that, go and check that out. So yeah, Tsonga has Nishioka in the first round, and that's going to be tough. Nishioka's playing pretty well at the moment. It's just great to see Tsonga back on the tour, like basically back playing. He's fit and healthy. Obviously, he's had those injury concerns, or not concerns, but he had a long injury layoff. Pretty much cost him all of last year. Tamini, what are your thoughts? Obviously, you recently spoke to Tsonga. Like, what are your kind of thoughts on like where his game's at, and like, yeah, where his mind's at the moment?
I think his mind is completely present. I think it's been tough for him. You know, it's just his body. That's all. You know, he has come back, but in the interview he was saying that, you know, he's had to change his technique, you know, to, you know, accommodate the back issues, and you know, it's when he plays, it's obviously on his mind. And I think there's like still uncertainty about, you know, whether he, you know, what the future is, if he'll be able to get to a point where he feels physically capable and can play at a high enough level to beat the players he needs to beat, or if, you know, this might be the injury that, you know, he can't recover from. But he's the good thing is that he's here and he's trying and he's fully kind of committed. And, yeah. So far in his comeback, I think he's like 1-5. I want to say.
Yeah. That match against Lopez in Montpellier.
He's 1-5, and in the other matches he hasn't won a set. You know, he lost quite in Lyon. He lost to Tommy Paul in straight sets. Mm. But yeah, but we'll see. You know, he's here. He's trying, and it's another match to see like where he's at. So, yeah.
Lucy, your take? Got any views on Songa?
I don't really have much to say because, you know, he hasn't been too long since he's been back and stuff. Mm. But again, I feel like players like him or like the older players, I just want to see them just play and just enjoy it. You know, I feel like we spent a lot of time focusing on other things like, when are you retiring? When are you doing this? And so then I made a tweet not too long ago and I was like, a lot of us will regret spending so much time on those type of things where we can just spend the time to just enjoy watching them, you know, till they're gone. So I just want to see how he's just how he does, and yeah, again, the luck that he has is going to be the crowd,
being French and everything. In France, 100%.
France is going to be, you know, as much as the ghetto open is ghetto and the crowd is ghetto, they bring the energy. That's one thing I like about French Open. I feel like the energy there from the crowd with the way they scream like hooligans makes it fun. So I'm looking forward to it.
Just quickly as well to close, like your interview to Maney, I loved how you kind of like highlighted the fact that he is pretty much, you know, the best French player like of his generation, like considering like what he achieved. And that's something me personally, I didn't really not take into account, but I've not given him credit, like I think enough credit over the years. And I loved again how he mentioned the fact that like, you mentioned it, the fact that he's literally played in like the toughest like era of men's tennis, like probably ever. And he mentioned, included Andy Murray, like in that like big four talk, which I love when players do, because obviously Murray hasn't won as many slams as, you know, Nadal, Djokovic, Federer, but he's literally been up there competing with them, like for the most part. And Songa literally beating all four, like in a tournament, which is, I don't think anyone's ever done. So
So he beat Murray, Djokovic, and then Federer.
Oh, so it's three. Sorry, yeah.
And also Dimitrov. So that was
so crazy. Like it's just he's had an incredible career, and like Lucy said, it's just great to see like these players, like, you know, towards the end of their careers, like just enjoying being out there. Like it's just great to see. So yeah, hopefully Songa could have a run at this year's French Open. Francis Tiafoe, he's got an All-American clash to look forward to. So he's got Steve Johnson in the first round, which I think is a good draw for Francis. When I was looking at his past results, he's not actually won a main draw match at the French Open. So this will be hopefully his first main draw win. I don't know. He's never got past the first round. He played
in French Open.
Yeah, Roland Garros. He played qualifying towards the beginning of his career or at the beginning of his career, and obviously won in qualifying to win through to the main draw. But yeah, he's not won a main draw match, which I found very surprising. But I think he's got a good chance against Steve Johnson. Yeah, yeah. I think that's a good draw.
Johnson hasn't won a match all year, so.
Oh really?
Okay. So, I mean, the question is, I think with his injury, right? Francis's injury.
I think he's okay because he rolled his ankle. I think it was in Rome in qualifying. I mean, the talk is that he's fine. So it's just, he pulled out of Parma, like just as not precaution, but just to focus on the French Open. So I think he'll be good to go. And lastly, Mikel Yimmer, he's got Roberto Caballos Baena, the guy who just took out Gael Monfils in Belgrade. That's a tough one for Yimmer, but we'll see. I mean, I think Baena, he pulled out in Belgrade after that match against Monfils. So yeah, he's not going to be 100% coming into this, but we'll see what kind of condition he's in. What are your like expectations of Yema against Baena Tomaini?
I mean, I think you said it right. It's a tough match, given that, you know, he made the quarters. And he's been playing well on clay in general. I think he won Belgrade Challenger last month. And so, yeah, that's a tough match against a really kind of skillful clay quarter, like on the cusp of the top 100. But yeah, but we'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
Lastly, I just want to shout out Arthur. Is that the correct French pronunciation, Lucy? Arthur Fields. The 16.
Fils.
Oh, is it Fils? Of course, because it'd be like Monfils. Of course, yeah. So Arthur Fils, the 16-year-old Frenchman. He's a boy. He beat Bernard Tomic in the first round of qualifying, and that was a three-set win. That's his, like, I want to say that was his first, like, senior, like, tour appearance, because he's just been playing ITFs pretty much, and, like, juniors.
He's 16, yeah.
Exactly. But just great to see. Like, I think he's going to be a name to look out for.
Yeah, I was impressed. I watched some of it, and, like, physically he's 16, but he's hedged. he looks up, like, solid off the ground, a great good athlete. He got, I've never seen a 16-year-old get a code violation.
Oh, during the Tomic match?
Yeah, he scooped, like, Lucy won, understand, he screamed, like, "Mad putain!"
Oh, wow!
Like, and, like, so loud, like, deafening me, and then he got a code violation, which is funny, and I think afterwards he told the French press that, like, his temper's, you know, he's had a temper in the past and he's trying to control it, and he managed to control it mostly. Wow. Aside from that, they I think in French they said he had a sweet word, you know, during the match, but aside from that he was cool. So, yeah, he's good.
He won the Orange Bowl like late last year, which is obviously a prestigious tournament like on the junior circuit. So he's a name that people are, like, going to be familiar with in terms of, like, well, people in tennis anyway that kind of know the sport. But, yeah, I think he's someone we're going to be hearing a lot more from, like, in the future. So, that pretty much wraps up this pod, guys. I think, yeah, that's literally it. Unless there's anything else anyone wants to add anything else, or... Be good.
You normally ask the question.
Do you want to see? I didn't want to do that, you know. But I mean, as you've said it, I mean, yeah. Feel free. Who are you going with?
You guys start.
Lucy, ladies first.
Do you know what? I think for women, I might be a bit, you know, ambitious, but I think Sabalenka.
That's not. Yeah, that is not a bad, like, shout at all.
Sabalenka, yeah.
And for the men?
Oh, Nadal. Nadal. I was going to say Tsitsipas, but I know he can do it, but... Nadal or Tsitsipas?
What number would this be for Nadal? Does anyone know off the top of their head?
13 or 14?
14. It's just insane. Like, that's wild.
Nadal or Tsitsipas or Novak.
Just give me one.
I see. Ah, fuck. Nadal, definitely. Okay. I have Sabalenka and Nadal.
Your Sabalenka pick was solid. I like that. Because you were, I think that's a solid pick. And Nadal, who's going to argue with Nadal? Tomaini?
Nadal, I mean, yeah, obviously, I just get that out of the way. And with the women, I guess it depends on physically how she is, but if she's good, Muguruza, I think.
That's a great show.
Because she was playing so well early in the season, and then, like, she's had leg problems.
She pulled out in Madrid, didn't she? Or was it Rome?
Yeah, yeah. So she pulled out. She got retired in Charleston, pulled out in Madrid, and then she lost to Svitolina in Rome. But that's she was clearly injured.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's been a couple of weeks now. She's had like 2.5 weeks to get good. So, if she's good, I think, you know, obviously Świątek and Barty are kind of the front runners, but I could see her like just you know, she always comes out of nowhere. So
yeah, to be fair, she's kind of due like a slam, like, because her ranking, I don't know why she's just inside the top 20, isn't she? She's not top 10.
She's now like 13th. So because of the freeze, she's a top 10 player.
Easily. Like, So no, again, solid shouts. For me, men, I'm gonna go Nadal, obviously. on the women's side, yeah, it's a tough one. I think there's quite a few. I'm trying to think outside. Like, I don't want to go like the two picks you guys have gone with. I'm gonna go Barty. Really? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know what? The reason I'm not going for Barty is because I feel like people are going to come out this slam. Just the WTA is very... They're working their arse off.
It's true. Man. It's true. Yeah.
They're working their arse off.
It's basically, the women's draw is much more like... It's harder to predict than the men's. Like, yeah. By far. Like, so... Yeah, we'll see how that goes. But again, I love your pick for Sabalenka, because I actually do like Sabalenka quite a lot. So yeah. I would not be mad at that at all. Muguruza, I don't really feel like either way. It's indifferent. Like, but yeah, I'll be happy if she wins. Like, good for her. But yeah, guys, listen, thank you so much for tuning in. And Tamani, thank you again for joining us, man. Absolute pleasure having you on.
Thanks for having me.
So yeah, we look forward to reading all your like columns and, you know, think pieces over the next couple of weeks.
Hopefully there will be no more think pieces about Naomi.
No, it's cool. You're one of our faves, so it's all good. But yeah, guys, thanks for listening. Thank you for listening. And until next time, enjoy the French Open, and we'll see you again soon.